Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry. Barry, I saw a video the other day with Barry White in it, and I thought I'd give my Barry White voice. What do you think?
That's pretty good, Jeff. That's a lot better than I could do. I like Barry White, too.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. So today on Breaking Kayfabe, excuse me. Sorry, I got a little lost up in the thought there. Today, episode 183, Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry White. Barry Rose, excuse me. We will be, in the words of Dropkick Murphys, shipping up to Boston. You like what I did there, Barry? Because Barry and his lovely daughter, Zoe, took a road trip to Boston, and we will be hearing details, food-related details, tourism-related details, probably ran into Ron Lemieux or John McAdam. Check. Get the McAdam reference out of the way. And as well as that, Barry, we've got our match of the week. Our match of the week, Barry, we are going to Odessa, Texas. No, not Odessa, Florida, which is by Lutz, by the way. We are going March 8th, 1989, as Bret the Hitman Hart takes on, the evil million-dollar man, Ted DiBiase. And we'll have other stuff. Barry, what else we got going? Are you ready?
We do. We've got a couple of surprises, Jeff. We've got a lot that's taking place. Have you heard, by the way, and I did post this in our wonderful Facebook group earlier this week, but
Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry.
In the beautiful city of Lutz, Florida, which you're 100% correct, Jeff.
Check.
Is right near Odessa, Florida. I think they're directly next to each other.
Sister cities, if you will.
It's like Minneapolis, St. Paul, Dallas, Fort Worth, Lutz and Odessa. Absolutely.
It's in the same breath. You
know? Somebody won the lottery and they went. Do you remember the Publix that we stopped at?
You know what? As a matter of fact, now that you've said that, I do remember seeing that. And I told Kim, I go, son of a bitch, somebody in Lutz won the damn lotto. Yeah.
We were at that Publix. We were actually there.
I think you might have got the chicken strips or something like that, or maybe the chicken sandwich.
I did. And we also got a bottle of wine. Remember at the liquor store next door in our road trip?
Flaherty must have been with us. So along with all that, Barry, first of all, I want to start this show off. You know, we have new members or newer members of our Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry Facebook group that check in with us from now and again. And, you know, recently I got to give a shout out to Glenn Hillman, because Glenn sent me a note and I shared it with Barry and with Brian. And I just want to read it to you. He said, by the way, your podcast have meant so much to me and my friends throughout the past year. You probably hear this all the time, but no harm in telling you again, your style and originality is so refreshing and pure and amazing. I want to give you my money when I get some. So, first of all, Glenn, I want to let you do that. Okay. And I'm sure Barry and Lou are with me on that. Yes. But first of all, Barry, it's always nice to hear when we have some sort of positive impact out there in the wrestling podcast universe. So, Glenn, I want to say thank you, first of all, for the very kind words, not making light of it. It really did mean a lot, and I shared it with Barry and Brian, who were also, you know, very happy to hear that. And Barry, we're always happy to hear that we're making a positive impact out there.
We definitely really are, too. And it's, you know, it's a big thing. And it's we always talk about when we started this deal, you know, which is really coming up on 4 years in just a few months. There are so many things that take place that we never could have anticipated. And when you get a note like that, I got to say too, Jeff, I think I expected a lot more hate mail, and we rarely ever get anything. And it would be kind of fun if we occasionally got a hate letter. We would certainly skewer it on air.
Oh, yeah,
absolutely. It would make the podcast. So in some ways it's like, come on, somebody out there, I know that people out there, somebody's got to hate us, send us something. But when you hear something,
so you're encouraging hate mail. Is that what you're saying?
I'm encouraging at least one, but it's got to be legit. It can't be like, you know, like Benji or Neely,
or Travis or something like that.
Yeah, it can't be. No, I'm talking about, remember the guy when we were looking at the reviews early on, and some guy was like, "What the fuck is this, Klaus Nomi? I need like guys like that to write it."
Well, you know, I can reach out to Greenbaum and ask him.
There you go.
By the way, it's the first Greenbaum reference in a while. I totally checked my watch here. So, but also, since you mentioned the forthcoming anniversary of this podcast, which is still a good, almost 5 months away, let me just say that I was reminded by the aforementioned Travis John Doe Rames that recently, our Facebook group, Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry, celebrating the 3-year anniversary of that fine Facebook page And so we want to say once again how much we appreciate all of you. Over 1850 in the membership. I'm not going to say anything, Barry, but that's a little bit higher than the mothership. Thank you! So anyway. But, so let's get on with the show. Barry, I know that you have had recently occasion to go up to, as they say, Beantown, the home of Fenway Park. Oh, the hated New England Patriots, the Celtics, the Bruins. Who else we got to get pissed off about sports-wise from Boston? Barry, tell us about your trip with Zoe.
Absolutely. And interesting you say that, because I think I drove by. I didn't drive by where the Patriots, the stadium, but I drove by I believe they play in, if I'm correct, Framingham, Massachusetts.
I believe it's Foxborough, but thank you.
Oh, is it Foxborough? Well, then I did not drive by Foxborough. I thought it might have been Framingham.
Somebody from Boston right now is going, he's a fucking idiot.
He's a fucking, yeah. John Lee over in Wales is going, what a fucking idiot.
The Welsh, they get angry.
They get angry, but I did go by.
Now there's a guy that's going to send a hate letter.
I love that guy, actually. But I did go by Fenway, and Joey and I were driving. But it was a really nice trip. We decided early on she'd been wanting to get to Boston for a couple of years. She wanted to get a look at BU, and I'm very familiar with that area. So I said, Zoe, I would love to go up to Boston, and we did. So it's the first time that I've taken, quote unquote, any sort of vacation since the pandemic hit.
Nice. And a little is Zoe, excuse me, is Zoe considering a BU?
Zoe is considering. Zoe wants, so during her spring break, which ends today, she goes back to school tomorrow, actually going back to in-person matriculation beginning tomorrow, which has been virtual for the last year. She will go back to in-person, but she looked at Penn State, Pitt, obviously, because of Zach as well, had a great time there. She looked at University of Maryland and looked at BU.
Go Terps.
Yeah, she is. And that's where my wife went. She went to University of Maryland, but in Delaware, actually, University of Delaware.
Go Blue Hens.
Zoe has made the decision that she wants a city school and not a remote campus.
You know, that lets Penn State out. Okay. That
leaves Maryland out, and that leaves Delaware out. So.
To what, Pitt and BU?
BU, and then she'll have to add some more. But she is showing interest in being in the state of Florida, so University of Florida is on her radar.
I Chris will not Qualman, say go Gators. I'm sorry. No,
if Qualman is listening, will
be. He's going to say it, but I'm not going to say it.
And I will be reaching out to him for the recommendation letter. Yes. Being an alumnus of that fine school, as well as a contributor. And Chris also put on wrestling shows and concerts, I believe. So
Stephen O'Connell Center, maybe, as I think recall.
That's what it was. Yeah, yes, Stephen O'Connell. So we made the decision to go up, but we stayed in the Boston Park Plaza Hotel, which is the hotel that I've stayed at every time I've been in Boston. I love where it is. It's directly across from the Boston Parks. Boston Common is there, and it just is such a really nice area. Close to Newberry Street, where there's great shopping. And Zoe had a full agenda of stuff she wanted to do. And of course, half of that involved food. So I was 100% on board with that. The other half involved shopping, which, to be honest, I actually had a really good time. And we had a good time. But
it was more than just dad, hand me the credit card.
Oh, it's a lot more than that. Okay. She's a great kid. Every parent will brag about their kids, and I get that. And Zoe, certainly when she was younger, could have been really tough. But I'm really fortunate that I've got a great relationship with her. I love being around her. I can't say enough good about our trip and how much I really enjoyed being with her. It was a really big deal for me. But she had a list of places we had to eat, and I got to tell you, she fucking scored. So the first place we went to was a place called Kimchi Poppy Corn Dogs, Korean corn dogs. And I posted photos, and this guy, a relatively famous, he's been doing these Korean style corn dogs for the last year to 2 years in Boston. And we got two of them. One was essentially what's a mozzarella stick. It's mozzarella. It is a batter. And I don't know what the batter is. I don't know if it's corn based or what. You don't get that strong corn flavor, but then he put sugar on the outside. And I got to tell you, at first I'm going, I don't know. And you take a bite and it's crispy on the outside. The cheese is It's the kind of cheese that you're pulling apart. You know, I forget what they call that, but you're pulling it and it's stretching the cheese. That's what it's called. And we had that
as opposed to cutting the cheese, which is a completely different reference. Yes.
Yeah. But God knows we do a lot of that too. And we did a lot of car afterwards, but we got this corn dog. So it's a hot dog. It is battered. And then they put French fries on the outside. Then they deep fry the thing. And, it was, and it's spectacular. Again, really crispy. Everything is cooked, and it's not your mother's corn dog, your grandma's corn dog that you think of. This is something completely different. So I actually want to go back. We're talking about going back in July, and I want to go back here, and I want to try whatever else he's got on the menu. But we really scored. Zoe did this research, and I'm going to post this video. There is a restaurant in Malden, Missouri, which is, you know, one of the suburbs of Boston, and it's a place called Crazy Good Kitchen.
Wait, you just said Malden, Missouri is a suburb of Boston.
Did I say, I've always got Malden, Missouri on the brain.
That's where Eddie Gilbert had his first match.
That's 100% correct, Jeff.
Check.
Eddie Gilbert did have, so there was a promoter called Henry Rogers that ran Malden, Missouri for years, and it was a very independent. Rarely would you get guys that had a career, but a lot of up-and-comers started. Eddie Gilbert started there. There was a guy named, for old-time Memphis fans, a guy named Dallas Montgomery. I don't, what do you think, Jeff? Work or shoot? Dallas Montgomery.
Yeah, that sounds like could be a work. Yeah.
He got his start there. And occasionally they would get some older guys that were on their last.
I think Tommy, when Eddie first started out, they worked a couple tag teams where Tommy appeared in Malden. I think I remember actually reading that in the guy. What was the guy that was Eddie's fan club president that passed away in the cards?
Robert Justice.
Yes, I think it was one of his dirt sheets where I saw the results from Malden, Missouri, and then pulled that one out of my hat.
Your batting average is on par today. You're batting 1,000%. Terry Robert Justice was the fan club president for the Gilberts. And I believe Eddie is the first, not that fan clubs truly exist anymore as we used to know them, but Eddie actually had a fan club in his honor before his first match. He wasn't even wrestling yet. And Terry Justice had already started a fan club for the guy. Wow. So, but you're right. He spent 2 or 3 months and then he made his way to the CWA promotion, which I think they were calling it then, which was Memphis, and he teamed. And I think Buddy Wayne and Ken Wayne worked Malden also. That was the feud when Eddie Gilbert first broke in. It was Wayne.
Those matches are actually from Memphis, are out there on YouTube, I believe.
Really
stuff,
good.
Yes. Yeah. And good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah, really good. And Ken Wayne has run into some legal problems. I believe he's incarcerated for many years. So he did some things that we probably shouldn't get into or won't get into momentarily, but
we got talented. Sidetracked. Let's get back.
We did get a little sidetracked.
Korean hot dogs.
Korean hot dogs. Great. But then we went to Crazy Good Kitchen in Malden, and it's not Missouri, Malden, Boston, Malden, Boston, Malden, Massachusetts, fucking Malden, Massachusetts, which
Spit
is
it out. You're a professional broadcaster. By God,
sir. What awards have we won, Jeff?
We are, in fact, a Peabody award-winning broadcast. We are also, as Lou said, we're now up for the Sherman Award, the Peabody and Sherman Award, of course, very exclusive. I think we're in the running for the Pulitzer, and that would be it. That's the big trifecta, the Peabody and Sherman, and the Pulitzer. So
we were in Malden, Massachusetts, Crazy Good Kitchen, and we pull up, and it is literally like this little shack. There are no seats inside. They do have a deck and you can sit outside. There's maybe 4-6 stools at max. A lot of people actually eating in their cars or taking food to go.
Weather was
maybe 55.
So you could sit out. It wasn't too cold. That's what I meant.
It was a little drizzly, but at the same time, we didn't care. We weren't going to let it stop us. And it was spectacular. So Zoe said, why don't we get a burger? I think they call it the American burger, and then get a chicken sandwich. And both were out of this world. We got a large order of fries, and they do cheese fries, Jeff. You know how they do cheese fries?
How do they do cheese fries?
They give you a tub of melted cheese to dip your fries or anything you have in, including your burgers. And when I say a tub, it's probably a pint to 2 pints of melted cheese in a container. It was.
We talking American cheese here, a cheddar. What are we talking?
I don't know. It wasn't. I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know. It's. It could have been some sort of liquidy cheese.
Okay, gotcha.
Like, you know, but in any case, it does work. And we were dipping the burger in there, dipping the chicken sandwich in there. The chicken sandwich came with a spicy ranch dressing, coleslaw, and then some sort of hot sauce also. The burger may have been, I'll say it's in the top 5 burgers I've ever had. The fact that I'm still
high praise.
Zoe and I had lunch at Shake Shack today, and we were still talking about that burger. That we will absolutely be back. But if you live in the Boston area, if you've never been to this place, Crazy Good Kitchen, do yourself a favor, get there because it's spectacular. They're also opening up a second location on Newbury Street. Newbury Street's a pretty cool street too. It's a lot of stores. It starts off a little hoity. There's your Cartier, your Lululemon, stores that you and I would never go into. And then as you start to move down the street, it becomes a lot more friendly. There's some pretty funky, cool restaurants and some hip stores. I got my phone fixed, Jeff. A new battery put in for only $40. So
you answer your phone, by the way, when there are calls or texts. But I digress. Go ahead.
Not after 8 o'clock. I don't. You're damn right. But I got to say, this Crazy Good Kitchen was really, really something special. And in some ways, I'm thrilled that I don't live near it because I would be there all the time eating. It was fantastic. So that part was great. The shopping was great. We did a lot of driving. We wound up hitting some stores in Dorchester.
The Duke of Dorchester.
All I could think of is I was driving there. And once I was there, and first thing in my head, I was going to start asking people, anybody know where Pete fucking Doherty is? Pete Doherty around here? But I guess the Wahlbergs are from that area. It's which I didn't know, but Dorchester is considered the South End, and they're considered Southeast. So I know that the Wahlbergs are somewhere from that area. And then we actually went for dinner that night. We went to BU. We got an unofficial tour of the college campus in the area. Fantastic. And then we had a big dinner, Jeff, at Raisin Cane's.
Ooh, with the dipping sauce.
I got to say that dipping sauce is spectacular. I think everything else is good, but, you know, I don't know. The chicken finger to me is a chicken finger. I don't see the difference, but that dipping sauce is a winner. But I want to tell you what I really liked, and I thought about you when we were there, and I thought about the conversation we had last week about hospitality. Mm-hmm. So my daughter is part of a squad. She has 3 best friends. And they do everything together. They think of each other. And her friends had asked her to bring back Raising Cane's because they had never tried it and always wanted to. So I actually had a cooler in my trunk, and we went into Raising Cane's and we ordered our food. And then I spoke to the manager and I said, it's going to sound a little weird, but we're going to get a large order of chicken fingers. Could I get a couple of bags of your crushed ice? And I explained why. And he said, it would be my absolute pleasure to do that for you.
No, wait. First of all, super nice of the guy to do that. You know, props to him for that. But when you maneuvered the guy over and said, can I speak to you for a second? Did you throw out your past managerial experience in the restaurant industry?
I did not.
Instead, just wondering.
I was playing. I can count on probably 2 fingers the times I've done that. And I only do that because I don't, even though I am a Mark or a Rube, I don't want people thinking that you're talking to some guy that, you know, if you're going to try to fuck somebody, I might not be the guy in a restaurant that you want to fuck. So I didn't say that. But what I did say to him was, we love your chicken. Unfortunately, this is the closest location to Philadelphia where we're from. And I said, all of my daughter's friends want to try Raising Cane's. That's how I kind of prefaced the whole thing. He was so friendly. He brought these 2 bags of ice, and then he said, do you want me to put these in your car for you?
Hey, he didn't. What was his name? Do you remember?
His name was Steven, yes.
Steven. So first of all, on behalf of Barry, before you even continue with the story,
sure.
I'm going to encourage, what part of Boston was this in? It was in the South Side?
No, this is right near Boston University. This is right near BU. Yep.
Okay. So any of our listeners that are in within a relative distance driving vis-a-vis that kind of stuff of Boston, we're going to encourage you to go to this Raising Cane's by Boston University, go Terriers, and say that Barry freaking Rose from Breaking Cafe with Letter and Barry has encouraged you to go in and spend your hard-earned money, your filthy lucre. First time we've ever used the word filthy lucre on this podcast, by the way.
I like that.
And say, because Steven was such a good guy, that's why we are giving you our business. Maybe we can turn this into an endorsement deal from Raising Cane. Okay, go ahead, Barry, finish the story.
Yeah, that would be good. We have a new sponsor, by the way, Jeff. It's Raising Cane's Chicken Fingers.
I like that idea.
I like this idea, exactly. But couldn't have been any nicer. Couldn't have been any more. And we were talking last week, obviously, about hospitality and what it all entails. And they went above and beyond. And I was just really taken with it. I got home and I wrote a letter to corporate saying that this was some of the best service I have ever had in a quick serve environment. You have got a winning team and you have got a Raising Cane's fan for life. Please open up in Philadelphia or the suburbs shortly. And I actually got a reply. It said, you know, it was kind of an automated reply, but I got it. But it was great. And Raising Cane's really does a nice job. And that sauce is really delicious. Peppery.
Saucy.
But it was actually, it's down the same street where I had dinner, I guess a little over a year ago with Mark Beaudry. Benji was there. Josh Dunn. Remember him? Remember Josh Dunn?
I remember.
Remember him? But we all had dinner right there. That was a good time. But I love Boston. So we are making plans to go back in July. Here was the other big thing that I was really taken with. Boston gets a bad rap, super friendly. Look, I've lived in Philadelphia and New York, and I spent years in New York City. I've been in Philly now for, you know, over 15 years. Boston is not like Philly or New York when it comes to the friendliness aspect. People there are friendly. People would stop Zoe and I on the streets. We were wearing matching jackets. If she got me a jacket for my birthday and she had one and we were wearing matching jackets, and people would stop us and go, "You're twins." And I'm talking guys who are like 50 or 60 years old are stopping us and saying that. So super friendly, but it's a dog town, Jeff. Everywhere
you can't go wrong there.
That's it. Everywhere you go, there were people walking their dogs. Their dogs are friendly. And then here's the other aspect. People are bringing their dogs into stores. You are allowed to bring your dogs into the majority of stores, at least the ones that we saw.
Okay, so this isn't like Fifi, the little two-pound dog.
Exactly. No, it's not. There was a Labradoodle in a store that Zoe took me into, and a full-grown Labradoodle. And so the whole time I'm like, fuck, we should have brought Ozzy. So we are going to bring Ozzy. Ozzy, you're coming with us to Boston. So we're bringing Ozzy next time. But it was a great.
That's Ozzy.
That's all. Oz. Yeah, he's sleeping. He's out.
Okay.
He played hard today. It's Easter. He played hard. So that's it. That's pretty much my wrap up. Really nice time. You know, just I'm excited to get back.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things. I'll be honest with you folks out there. Barry and I were talking before we started recording. We were discussing his trip up with Zoe and how much it meant to him, you know, having this quality time spent with Zoe and stuff like that. And, you know, and I told him this reminded me of a time when my wife had taken my son up to school and it was just me and my daughter, Kelly. And she was like maybe, I don't know, 14, 15 years old. And I got to be honest with you. We had a couple of really contentious years. As she was, you know, going through those, those middle school years, Barry, oh boy, they can be real killers. But so we had a very contentious relationship. And so there we were, just the two of us in the house, and we had to sort our own business out. And so here's what happened. So she is at that point going out with a guy from school. Okay. I don't even know what his name is. So this other guy comes over, I'm in the neighborhood. Uh-huh. And so, you know, I was at that point doing the whole, you can go sit in your bedroom, but the door is going to be open here. You got to maintain the parental controls there, Bear. And so, so then they ask, we're going to go outside, just stay out in the driveway or something like that and talk. And I said, yeah, no problem. So then she says, I want to, He's going to leave. I'm going to walk him to the end of the street. Okay. So we're like three houses down from the stop sign. And then there, you know, you usually turn left to go to the main drag, but the road also extends about another 15 houses down if you go past the stop sign. So after, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes, I'm like, well, it's kind of weird. She should be back by now. So I kind of popped my head outside, didn't see her, went out to the street, looked down the street, and I saw her and the young gentleman, and they were walking, you know, a little bit of hand-holding, that kind of thing. And so I was like, that's kind of interesting. I was under the impression she was dating someone else. And so she came back inside and I said, let's sit down and have a little chit chat. And she said, okay. And I said, you know, I said, I want you to know something about something I've just seen. And, you know, I related a time after I had divorced my second wife. But before I met, of course, the sainted Mrs. Bowdrin, number three. And I said, you know, I said, I saw somebody that I used to know. And we went off to have a private conversation in the old courthouse. And, you know, you think you're where no one can see you. And guess what happened, Barry?
What happened?
Somebody saw us. Yeah, of course. Uh-oh. Because when you think no one's watching, that's when someone's watching. And that's what I told my daughter. I said, you know, I said, what happens if you're walking on the street with that kid and you don't think anyone's paying attention? All of a sudden, car comes down the street and lo and behold, it's your boyfriend's buddies in the car with mom or dad and is like, hey, what's Kelly doing with that guy? And so anyway, so I kind of said this was not a good idea. And then, you know, because we had the time with each other, I set her down and I explained her where I was coming from with a lot of the whole dad, good cop, bad cop thing with mom and some of the parental rules vis-a-vis things she could and couldn't do. And I told her, I said, look, I'm going to be honest with you. My father was a career naval officer. Okay. So, and as I pointed out to you, Barry, you've seen the great Robert Duvall in The Great Santini, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Terrific film. He might have got nominated for best actor in that, I think. But it's about growing up in a military household. And that's what I did. So I told my daughter, I said, look, I said, you just need to understand that, you know, when my dad would say, hey, you didn't ask what, you know, you went over and said, found out what the heck was going on. You know, mom, you had the leeway where, you know, if mom said, I need you to do something, you could say, why? Now with dad said, I need you to do something. It's like, when do you want it finished? Okay. Because that's just the way it was. And you got that little bit of leeway with mom, but you didn't have that leeway with dad, you know? And so I said, this is the way that I was raised. This is why I expect those things from you. And I'm happy to say that after that weekend, my relationship with my daughter completely changed. And lo and behold, you spend a little time with your kid. You start explaining things to them, you know, maybe on a more adult level. And I was very lucky. My daughter got it, you know, and our relationship completely changed, you know, and I was about to say, would it be 180 or 360 on the change there? But math was never my strong suit. But anyway, and I'm sure that's one reason why you really appreciate your time that you spent with Zoe, because it helps you be a better parent.
Yeah, you know, it's a couple of things. I try to be as good a parent as I can. I'm certainly not perfect, you know, and I don't put that expectation on myself that I should be perfect. But, you know, at the end of the day, I want Zoe and Zach also, though Zach is in a different world now, being a 20-year-old frat boy at college, you know. But I want Zoe to know the difference between wrong and right. But I want her to be happy. I think what it all comes down to is understanding what she can and can't do, but at the same time, be happy. That is such a major, major thing. And, you know, so many, I don't want to get too far into it, but in the area that I lived in, you know, there's so many helicopter parenting and people that are just, you know, their kids can't walk outside and do anything without the parents having to be there. Where are you going? What are you, you know, and it's like, give your kid a little bit of freedom. Let your kid breathe. Let your child make a decision. But everybody's got a version of what they consider proper parenting. And everybody's right if you ask them.
No, and you know, quite honestly, one of the things that really was one of my proudest moments as a parent is when our daughter called us one day and said, you know, I just want to tell you guys how much I appreciate that you didn't try to be my best friend when I was a teenager. Because, you know, a lot of times, especially when they're teenagers, and I talked about those miserable middle school years, that's not the time to be your kid's best friend. Be your best, you know, your kid's best friend when they're in their 20s or something like that. I mean, of course, be a good parent and be nice to them and stuff like that. But, you know, again, sometimes being a good parent means saying no to your kids. And, you know, they don't maybe understand it at that point, but at some point later on, they will. And that's what happened with my daughter, because she saw a lot of her friends whose parents had raised them with, oh, whatever you want. Yeah, I don't want you to be upset. You know, oh, yes, of course, you can have whatever you want. Yeah. And now those kids, you know, don't know how to be adults because their parents, you know, weren't there to kind of steer the old ship and, you know, whatever. And I think you're doing a great job. And I think Jennifer's doing a great job with your kids, too, because you got two good kids.
Yeah, absolutely. And Jennifer, we're different. We did not, you know, that was, I think, part of our problem is we didn't always see eye to eye on certain things with the kids. At the same time, her love for her kids and her wanting to do the right thing for the kids, never in question, not even once, you know. Sure. And I think she would probably say the same thing about me, is that, you know, we certainly have a different viewpoint on certain things, but at the end of the day, we always want to do the right thing for our kids. We love our kids tremendously. Where I consider, you know, if I was to die today, I would, you know, I was a father. If the one thing that should be on my tombstone was I was a dad and I loved being a dad. And that was really the most important thing for me. And I have a feeling whether I die, you know, in a year or I die in 20 years, that's going to be the same. I was a father and I really loved it.
What else would it say? Would it say, I was a father, I loved it, podcaster, Ethiopian food.
There it is. That, you know, I was waiting for it.
Had to get that out for Joe Christie.
Shits
there,
on so. Lines. Come on.
I don't know. What would mine say? Hey, help me out. Dad, you know, of course, yeah.
Say dad. It would say loves dogs, unconditionally loves dogs. Jeff, here's the thing. So if I sit back and let's say I blank slate it for a second and I look at you, you know what the first thing I think of is you? And this is a real, where is the lovely Mrs. Bowdrin?
She is here. She is prepping Easter dinner.
You, and I'm not saying this because you're my best friend. I'm not saying this because we've done 183 episodes, never missed a fucking week. I'm saying this because it's true. You have got a great relationship with your wife that the first time I really spent time with you guys, I was able to pick up on it right away. And I see it. And every time we have a conversation, when if it's off air and we're having a conversation, you'll say, yeah, Kim was just telling me this, or I ran this by Kim. And I don't think much happens. Well, maybe a little happens, but I don't think a whole lot happens. I don't think a lot happens that you don't share with your wife. And I think that right there is a big reason that this has been such a wonderful, wonderful marriage for you so far.
Let's put it this way. How many women, married women out there, do you think would put up with something like this? We're walking through the Publix the other night doing the grocery shopping. I'm being aggravating as I can be. Just, you know, ramping it up and stuff like that. So we got to talking about my boy Gunny. And I said, my boy Gunny, he has my heart. I have to say that. And so she said, oh, okay. And I said, no, now that I think about it, let's just say, my boy Gunny, you have 50.1% of my heart, and Gunny has 49.9% of my heart. And she looked at me and she goes, you sure about them figures? And I said, no, you're slightly above Gunny, you know. And I sit there and I started thinking about it. It's like, you know, a lot of women, if you said that, they'd sit there and kind of just roll their eyes. She's rolling her eyes at me right now. And so, you know, but there's a lot of women that might get a little agitated. A couple women I used to be married to, maybe, or I'm thinking about. But, you know, she is of such a good nature that, you know, that she can take something like that and realize that, you know, of course, I love her and stuff like that. But she also appreciates the fact that my boy Gunn, you know, has my heart, too.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, I saw a sign.
He's a good boy. Damn it. I'm sorry.
I saw a sign when we were in Boston. I think it was a refrigerator magnet. And I should have bought it. And it said, I'm pretty sure that my soulmate is my dog. I'm 99% sure my soulmate is my dog. And I looked at it and I said, Zoe, I'm pretty sure 100% my soulmate is Ozzy. And yeah, it's, and I, you know what, let me tell you, I make no apologies or excuses, and I couldn't be any happier about it, because I love this guy with all my heart.
I am now typing in, my dog is my soulmate. I think we have the title of this week's episode, My Dog is My Soulmate. Okay, now speaking of this fine episode, now, Barry, it is time for us to go to Odessa. No, not Florida, but to Texas. We are talking the million-dollar man, Ted DiBiase, and he is taking on Bret the Hitman Hart. We have, let me just, a couple of parameters here. We're talking from the Wrestling Challenge. So you remember that, Bear? I saw that banner, and I was like, wow, yes. Wrestling Challenge. I haven't heard that reference. We got Tony Schiavone, Tony Schiavone, as some call him, and Lord Alfred Hayes on the call. Tell us what you thought about this match, Bear.
Absolutely, too. And I'll tell you, with Lord Alfred Hayes, the first thing that went through my head was, I really missed the guy, because he was such a great heel in professional wrestling. And then if you listen to him, you know, as a commentator and calling matches or doing interviews, he comes across as the nicest grandfatherly British, obviously, that you could ever imagine. I truly just think, what a wonderful guy. I would have loved to have met him. Wrestling Challenge, if I'm correct, Jeff, this was one of their syndicated shows.
Yes. There were Wrestling Superstars and Wrestling Challenge. I want to say those are shows.
So they put on a match that is, you know, I don't know how many matches took place on Wrestling Challenge, but this is a fantastic match. They gave it away for free. And then you actually forwarded an article to me, and I read the article, and this is the first time these guys had ever worked together. If you want to, and right there should tell you everything that you need to know. If you want to see what professional wrestling should be, and if you want to see what real professional wrestlers are like, watch this match. These guys had never worked together previously. And Jeff, this is a phenomenal match.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, and one of the things in the article that Barry referenced that was said was DiBiase said, wow, I really wish I could have worked a program with Bret, because I think it would, you know, so think about if these guys worked, well, let's just say a 3 to 6 month program where they shoot the angle and then they go out there on a, you know, a nightly basis, because that's pretty much what they were doing in the WWF at the time. So they would have had 3 to 6 months of working every single night, where they got every little nuance, every little subtlety that they could work out. And then you put them on a pay-per-view. Let me tell you something. I firmly believe you would have had a match from the 80s that would have been quite possibly on my best of the 80s. It would have been a match that I think on a grand scale would have been really fondly remembered. You think about the matches that Ted had with, you know, Randy Savage, the cage match in Madison Square Garden, that Bret the Hitman Hart had with Mr. Perfect. Those are matches that people still remember as being some of the finest of the WWF from the latter part of the decade. And I think given the time and, you know, the push and stuff like that on a pay-per-view or at a really big, you know, show, like, an MSG show, I think it absolutely would have been remembered that way.
Yeah, and it was, you know, the WWE is kind of bizarre like that, because it's almost like they always crowbarred in a couple of matches, which are phenomenal. You know, whether it took place with Randy Savage or Shawn Michaels or Bret Hart, Ted DiBiase, and then they would surround it with, like, just, you know, horrific, horrible shit. So there had to be somebody. But this article, Jeff, you should definitely, when the episode drops, post that article in the group, because hearing the stuff between DiBiase and Pat Patterson that took place behind the scenes, and Patterson, obviously, you know, just going, you guys have never worked together before. I just thought that was such an amazing read. DiBiase is billed here as having his winter residence in the Netherlands and Antilles.
That was brilliant. Yes, that was
it is fucking stuff. Genius. So immediately I'm going, the Netherlands. I knew the Dutch Antilles. I'm going, is that real? But it is the Netherlands Antilles, apparently. It's four islands, Jeff. It's Aruba, which I've been to Aruba, Bonaire, Curacao, and the Leeward Islands. And I've never been to those three, but I thought that was great. Lord Al Hayes comes across with a line. I don't know if you picked up on it. Early on, as Ted is taking off the million-dollar belt, Lord Al Hayes, in his finest British accent, says, I once had a Gucci belt that cost me $75. Yes. And I thought that was a lot of money. It's like, come on, that's fucking, it doesn't get any better than that. Watching this too, these guys are evenly matched up. This is a perfect match. These two guys, they're, you know, this somebody truly did drop the boat not making this a long-term program, because these guys, they're identical on so many levels. Bret Hart, though, is, I think he is looked back as a guy that, you know, there was some shit that took place maybe the last 5 years of his career that, for good or bad, that's how people remember Bret Hart. When you go back, and I believe this match was 93, Jeff, if I'm correct?
No, 89.
It was 89. Wow. Bret Hart is absolutely fantastic. He's flawless. His mechanics literally are flawless in the ring. Everything he does is spot on. It is perfect. He does great. The ending is a little, you know, it's a schmoz in a sense. There's no definitive. But what did you expect? You know, they weren't going to go to give somebody a clean pin when these two guys match up. This is great, though. And I'll tell you what, if a WWF had produced more matches like this on a regular basis, you know, instead of just throwing this out there every so often, I think I would have paid more attention in the 80s and into the 90s, because I didn't. This is great.
A couple things that I noted. First of all, when ring announcer Mike McGurk comes out, they do the bit with Virgil and Ted where he demands to be introduced as the $1 million champion, which, again, along with the whole From the Netherlands Antilles, just solid, solid heel stuff. And I'm sure you noticed very early in the match when Ted rolls out of the ring, the two kids at ringside that give him a big FU sign. And that's just the kind of thing you don't, you know, when there's well-defined heels and baby faces and you see the kids that are just taking a visceral approach where they're giving it to them and stuff like that. And then, you know, very early in the match, we had a couple of quick two counts by DiBiase. And then, of course, DiBiase, you know, I remember one of the complaints that Bret Hart had about Ric Flair was he said, oh, he does the same spots in every match. And, you know, of course, I think at the time I said, well, geez, you know, how many Bret Hart matches have you watched where he does the face first into the, you know, into the corner? That's in like every Bret Hart match. But DiBiase with his fist drop, okay, where he kind of from the side and he drops the fist down on the guy. It looks so good the way he does it. And everything, you know, this was, of course, before DiBiase started to have, I think was it back problems that really kind of derailed him at some point amongst, you know, a bunch of other stuff. But
back or neck, wasn't it?
Yeah. But he was so smooth in this, you know, and it just so good. Let's see. They were, of course, pushing. You know, the disappointing thing is they were talking about coming up in WrestleMania 5, the opponent for Ted DiBiase. No, not Bret the Hitman Hart. It was Brutus Beefcake. Oh, God. Those poor fans. Like, just imagine if they had this match at WrestleMania 5. You know, that would have been the match that everybody remembered from that show. So the finish of the match, it ends up, as Barry said, being a double count out of the ring. But Bret Hart with a plancha on Ted DiBiase and Virgil. And may I say, giving the guy his due, Mike Jones gets crapped on. A lot of times it's very well deserved. You see the pictures of him at autograph signings where he's sitting by himself and nobody is coming by because, let's be honest, the guy hasn't meant anything for over 20 stinking years. But he was very effective in his role here as DiBiase's stooge, as his bodyguard and stuff like that. He absolutely had the role down. And for the time that he had it, I had no problem with him working in that role. He was pretty effective on it. Made me think of something, Barry. I haven't prepped you on this, so I'm just going to throw this out to you willy-nilly. There's never a bad time to use the word willy-nilly as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
So, Barry, compare and contrast Ted DiBiase as the million-dollar man in the WWF versus Ted DiBiase in Mid-South as the head cheese of the Rat Pack.
So are we discussing
Which one anything? Did you like better? Which one did you think was, you know?
Close. I mean,
I think the $1 million man was a better heel for a national level. Okay. Because let's be honest. Yeah. Because they needed a certain cartoon aspect, but he was great. The stuff where he's, you know, making the people, you know, like kiss his feet and he knocks the basketball away from the little kid. Oh my God. That was so brilliant. So he was a great heel, but he was definitely more evil in the Mid-South. I think that's pretty fair to say.
Yeah, he definitely, too. And here's the irony of the whole situation. If you had seen Ted DiBiase as a babyface in the 70s going into the early 80s, before he had ever become a heel, I'm not sure that in any way I could have imagined Ted DiBiase being one of the greatest heels of all time. I wouldn't have seen that. This guy was a great babyface. I mean, just truly a great babyface that he couldn't have been evil. He was evil, but again, the difference being, as you
he
just
was
said, that
was quasi-evil. He was the Diet Very Coke good. Of evil. Thank you. That was my Dr. Evil impression.
That was actually pretty good.
Thank you. Thank you.
What, you know, with Ted DiBiase, though, the word that you said was a word that I was going to use, which was cartoon character. And he was a cartoon, even though the Million Dollar Man was better than the majority, not as a worker, because he certainly was much better as a worker, but even the actual persona, the gimmick, was better than the majority of gimmicks that we see in the WWE. Take out the sequined, jacket he used to wear and all that stuff. But Ted DiBiase was the kind of guy that could have pulled anything off. But in my opinion, Ted DiBiase in Mid-South is the pinnacle. It's what it's supposed to be.
Ted DiBiase in Mid-South or Ric Flair in Mid-Atlantic? Ooh, that's going to start some conversation.
Very good. Very good. The only thing that hurts me when it comes to Ric Flair, and I hate to use a cliche, but of course that means I'm going to, is has Ric Flair tarnished his legacy? And he has. We can debate it. You can say whatever you want, but there's a certain amount that damage that he's done to himself over the last 20 years, 25 years. And Ric Flair in Mid-Atlantic, gold. Ric Flair in NWA, gold. Ric Flair the last, 20 years or so, not quite gold. And look, there's a lot of respect, the fact that he's a lifer, that, he can't stop. That's how much he loves wrestling. And I got to tell you, I respect that because, how many guys did we see in the 80s and 90s get in the business strictly for money? Ric Flair got it. he loves. There you go. Prime example. There's a lot of them out there. But Ric Flair was a guy that loved professional wrestling, lived and breathed that gimmick, and unfortunately didn't know when to get out of the ring. And at the same time, I think he was probably exploited to some degree because the higher up should have said, Rick, please, you look like you've got the body of Dick the Bruiser now. You're sagging in places that we didn't know could sag. Get out of the ring at this stage. But I like it. That's a nice comparison between DiBiase and Flair.
I will say that this discussion of Ric Flair, the later version of Ric Flair, may be available for greater detail and discussion on our Patreon episode, Barry.
What?
What? Yes, yes, we will discuss that at the end of today's episode, perhaps some forthcoming news.
All right.
That is what they call a tease. And as anyone who knows me knows anything about me, Barry, yeah. I can be a tease.
You can be a tease.
Well,
Jeff,
Jeff,
are you checking your watch? Do you know what time it is?
I'm looking. I can tell you it's Mrs. Bowden setting the table. So as we're recording this, Easter dinner is forthcoming, Barry. So what time is it on your end, though?
It is time for fire! We're doing Florida Man or not. And Jeff Bowden.
I'm going to say not. Oh, sorry.
You, sir.
Mary and Larry's baby boy and Chip and Reen's baby brother.
You have an impeccable record on Florida Man stories. Will you be able to maintain and withhold this record as I present three stories?
Well, at my age, Barry, it's very difficult for me to maintain. If you get, with the little blue. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about something else. Go ahead, please.
Yes. So, Jeff, I'm going to present to you the first story. I think you're going to like this one, too. Mm-hmm. Let me catch a breath. Asbestos contaminated tarantula could be on the loose. A web.
Boy, we don't have enough trouble.
You got to admit that's a great way to start off.
There's no question.
Yes, but check. Let's see if you see what I'm doing on the next line. A web of intrigue.
Ooh, that was good.
Oh yeah, was surrounding the gruesome discovery of a large tarantula skin in an attic recently. The giant tarantula was nowhere to be seen, but a spider expert warned it could still be at large at up to twice its size after
on Sven Gulli last week?
No, this is not. Nothing to do with Sven Gulli.
What was the movie that was on Sven Gulli with the giant tarantula in the cave?
Oh, yeah. Oh, fuck. That was a good one, too.
Yeah, it was a couple weeks ago.
What that one was called.
I thought you were going to Sven Gulli on me there.
I think it was a tarantula. It might have been tarantula.
With an explanation.
In the 50s, it was Plain and Simple. It was probably just tarantula.
But there would be an explanation.
That was a really good movie, though. I actually liked that one a lot. So the spider expert warned that it could still be at large up to twice its size after shedding its skin, and further testing revealed the skin had been contaminated with asbestos. Taking a page from the film Eight-Legged Freaks, which we talked about last week, experts are also concerned that if the spider mates, there possibly could be a genetic mutation because of the asbestos. Worryingly, the spider has still not been found. Jeff, did this take place in the beautiful Sunshine State or not?
Wait, a couple things. First of all, you remember the James Bond movie Live and Let Die?
Jeff, I saw Live and Let Die on my, I think it was my 12th birthday. My parents took me to see it with a group of friends. So, yes,
well,
I have seen it.
There's a reason I'm asking that, because, of course, there's the scene where Bond, I'm thinking of the wrong movie. That's where they put him. It was Dr. No. I'm sorry. No, the very first James Bond movie where they put the tarantula in Bond's bed, and it was a great scene. And he crawls up the bed, and then Bond ends up killing the thing, which, by the way, great musical background with the horns as he's taking his shoe and he's killing tarantula. Fantastic. But the reason I say that is because Dr. No had sent his henchmen to kill Bond, and he puts a tarantula on him. A tarantula is, it's not like you put a black widow or one of those spiders from Australia. Shout out to Robert Goodian. And so, you know, that would have, bit and then killed, but the tarantula, I'm sure it'll leave a nasty welt, but as far as I'm concerned, the tarantula does not kill. Now, I got off track there. Let me just say that I can't believe that we've got some kind of viperous, that's a snake. But anyway, is a tarantula of a deadly manner that, by God, I would not have heard of from one of my friends in Florida. So I'm going to say this is not Florida.
So before I reveal the great answer, two things quickly come to mind. And I did forget one of those two. So hopefully it'll come back to me. One, we're old. One was you did bring up Live and Let Die, which is a great movie. The great Yaphet Kotto in the movie.
Yes, Mr. He's Big.
Yes, recently just passed away in his 80s, also in Midnight Run, which, you know, I've gushed about numerous times. Great actor.
Hold on, Barry. Barry, join me. He raised an adult beverage to the memory of the great Yaphet Kotto. He was fantastic. Great character actor.
Yeah, just really. Okay. Really, yeah. Jeffrey Holder also in that movie. And yes.
I believe his character's name was Teehee.
He also, as Jeff was.
I'm sorry. That was Julius Harris. Jeffrey Holder was Baron Samadhi, I believe was his name.
Baron, that's right. Which I think was a takeoff. Was it, what's his name? Who was the pimp in WWE? What's the guy's name? The guy that was the pimp. He was like Papa Shang and all that.
Oh, you're not talking about Slick.
No, not Slick. Who was the guy that, Sweet Lou, help me out here. This is a brain fart. The guy that was Papa Shango, and then he was the pimp.
Papa Shango. He was the Ultimate Fighting Machine, Mustafa. Then he became the Godfather. Then he became the Good Father. Charles Wright is his.
Lou, throwing down some good, solid old WWE knowledge. Way to go, Lou.
And to Lou's point of what he's saying, I believe the first gimmick for Charles Wright was Baron Samadhi or some variation of that, which was a takeoff of Live and Let Die.
Okay. Lou, put yourself down for a bonus this week. Anyway, so as I said, Barry, I believe that this was not Florida because I certainly would have heard about this from one of my friends in Florida, you know, with the killer tarantulas plagued by asbestos.
Jeff, you're 100% correct.
That's another check. Go ahead.
It's not the state of Florida. However, if you want the bonus this week also, tell me, where did this take place?
That I don't have any idea.
You ready, Jeff? It took place in Wales.
Wales, John Lee.
Yes.
Two references for John. He may have an erection. Go ahead.
I spent all day looking for a whale story yesterday.
A tribute to John.
Absolutely. All right. Story number two. Oh, very. This is a very exciting story.
Well, the Ed McMahon routine from Karnak. Story two. Half our audience is going, "What the fuck is Ed McMahon?" Go ahead.
Exactly right. What the fuck is a Karnak? A mother allegedly sent deep fake photos and video of her teenage daughter's cheerleading rivals, depicting them naked, drinking, smoking to their coaches in a bid to get them kicked off the team. Rafaela Spohn, 50 years old, allegedly sent the manipulated photos and video to at least three of her daughter's teammates and their coaches on the cheerleading squad. She also anonymously sent messages to the victim.
Easy for you to say. Go ahead.
Oh, not really. She anonymously sent messages to the victims, urging them to kill themselves. Very, very nice woman.
Quality parenting, no question about it.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't they make a movie about this? They killed
did? Yeah.
The cheerleader's killer mom or something like that. It was this Texas.
That was in Texas. Yes. This story. Okay. Jeff, I will give you a hint. This did not take place in Texas.
Is this in Wales again?
This is the all Wales episode. Yes,
of course.
Spohn was arrested on March 4th and is charged with three counts of cyber harassment of a child and then three counts of general harassment, according to police. One of the girls and her coaches were sent photos that appeared to depict her naked, drinking and smoking from a vape pen. Her parents told police because they feared the videos could lead to a daughter being kicked off the team. Two more families came forward saying their daughters received similar messages. Police determined the videos were deep fakes, digitally altered images that appeared to be authentic. The images were created by mapping the girl's social media photos onto other images. In the investigation, detectives searched Spohn's smartphone and found evidence linking her to the numbers used to send the harassing text and images. Jeff, did this take place in Florida or not?
Again, I will only point out with my many varied connections throughout the state of Florida, the Sunshine State, I can't believe that a story like this would not have come through the woodworks without one of my Facebook friends posting. We have attorneys that I know that are proud members of the Breaking Kayfabe with Veteran and Perry Facebook page, by the way, that I would not have heard something about this. So I'm going to say not Florida, Barry.
Jeff, it's like you have somehow intrinsically tapped.
By the way, very good use of the word intrinsically, Barry.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. You have tapped into my brain waves. Because again, you are 100% correct, Jeff.
Well, in fairness, I'll take 75% credit because, of course, I did mention, was this a Texas story? Thinking that somehow this Texas cheerleader mom had gotten out of the joint and was doing stuff again. But no, I did say it wasn't Florida, in fairness, too. So.
And that is what the name of the game is, Jeff.
Of course.
This story took place 15 minutes from where I live in beautiful Chalfont, PA. So
now, was Chalfont a consideration for Barry Rose when he relocated?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Absolutely. Based off of this story alone, this will not be. So our last story, Jeff, and this is a fun story, of course. "I'm going to kill you, child molester," screamed Jorge Porto Sierra as he poured gasoline on a motel room door at the Friendly Village Inn. As Porto Sierra told police when they arrived on the scene, he intended to barbecue all the child molesters on fire and kill them.
But were they all in a room?
this is a frightening story in some ways. Police soon confirmed that 50-year-old Porto Sierra was indeed trying to kill four sex offenders by setting their rooms on fire at the Friendly Village Inn and Motel. According to the police report, a man was standing outside of his room when Porto Sierra jumped out of his car and began screaming at the individual. Terrified, the man ran back into his room, prompting Porto Sierra to break one of the motel's windows and pour gasoline inside. Meanwhile, the man and his roommate escaped through the back window. But Porto Sierra's rampage wasn't over yet, Jeff. Porto Sierra then reportedly attacked two other men inside a car in the parking lot by ramming his black Ford Focus into their vehicle. He then poured gasoline.
I'm glad you said a Ford Focus, because when you said by ramming him with his black guy, I was like, we're going off the rails here.
I should have just stopped in dead air. And right. He then poured gasoline into the car through an open window. The deputies arrived on the scene where they saw the man, and he surrendered right away. Waiving his Miranda rights, Porto Sierra confessed and told authorities they raped kids, they are child molesters, that all live here and they all deserve to die. Now, this is even the scarier part. There is actually a history of registered sex offenders living at the Friendly Village Inn and Motel, with approximately 20 calling it their home address. When the police asked why he didn't follow through with his plan, Jorge Porto Sierra simply responded, "Because you got here too soon." He was put into jail and is being held without bond. Something tells me, Jeff, you're going to know this one 100%.
So I have a couple questions. I don't know how in depth you've gone on the story, but then I will tell you something that you maybe don't know. I was trying to think of where did any of these guys die? Because I was thinking while you were getting to the last, none of them died. Okay. So there is a part of, I don't think I should say Fort Lauderdale, part of Broward County. I'm going to take you back, close your eyes, do your Vulcan mind meld there. Are you familiar with an area of Federal Highway just south of Oakland Park Boulevard? You know what I'm talking about now?
Yeah, absolutely.
And there was a hotel there, not the Bone Soir, by the way, which used to be there. It's not anymore. But there is a hotel there, and there's some kind of thing where it's not technically considered in it's like an unincorporated part of Broward County. And because of that, there's a hotel there that is home to a lot of registered sex offenders because, you know, no city certainly wants them. We don't want, in Fort Lauderdale, we don't want a registered sex offender there. And I know down in Dade County, there is a, and I'm not saying this like, oh, let's be, you know, sorry for these guys, but there are registered sex offenders in Dade County that live under a bridge because, of course, you know, what do you got? The scene from Lebowski where the Jesus goes and has to tell everybody, oh, by the way, I'm a convicted sex offender. And of course, we know what happens there. If you've seen The Big Lebowski, which, by the way, Barry, bounced out of the movie tournament. I can't friggin' believe it. But anyway, getting back there. So there's this the hotel in an unincorporated part of Broward County, just south of Oakland Park Boulevard and Federal Highway, that houses, or at least when I lived there, it did, houses these registered sex offenders because it's an unincorporated part of the county. So thereby they can live there without, you know, having these sort of city kick them out. It's like sort of this loophole in the law. So now that being said, I'm going to say based on the kind of street justice that went down here, that this is not New Hampshire or Vermont. This is a more of a conservative approach to law enforcement. So I'm going to say Texas or Florida. It's going to be one of the two. And just because I remember that story about the hotel in Fort Lauderdale, I'm going to say maybe Florida, Barry.
It is Florida too, and I thought you would get it because the first two stories came from other states. So you are 100% again. This actually, Jeff.
Check.
Where would you think? It's not Fort Lauderdale, but if you were a that's a loaded question. You don't want to ask somebody that, but yeah, but
if you're a sex offender,
where would you live in the state of Florida? Think about that for a second, though. What's the easy answer?
Well, you're not going to want to live in the Panhandle.
No, definitely not, because that's like living in Alabama. They'll kill you.
Well, they call it Lower Alabama is what they call the panhandle, actually.
So think about it. What is the state of Florida? What's maybe the biggest commerce of the state of Florida or close to it?
Cocaine used to be, but now it's I'm sure it's probably tourism industry, by the way, Barry, took a huge hit. So it's not Lutz, Florida, which would be the second time we've referenced. It's got to be like Miami, Fort Lauderdale, Orlando, something like that.
Orlando, exactly. This actually is Kissimmee. It's the home of Kissimmee. It's where Disney World is located. Disney, not in Orlando. It's in Kissimmee. But this is one of those hotels up along Erlo Bronson Highway, which is 192, which is was a really happening area some 40 years ago until iDrive and Orlando built up. And that's where everybody goes now. But all these hotels are basically rundown shitholes. And a lot of the criminals, the wards of the state, are actually even placed in these hotels. And there was a movie. Yeah.
And that's I'm pretty sure.
Did you watch the movie?
No. I'm saying that's exactly what happened in Fort Lauderdale, I'm sure.
Right,
so
exactly.
Anyway, please continue. I'm sorry.
And there was a movie that came out a couple of years ago called The Florida Project. And it was basically about all these motels that are essentially welfare and lower income motels. And people are there on a week to week basis. You know, some of them getting kicked out. The state pays for a lot. But there are a lot of kids there. And there is a scene in the movie where a suspected pedophile comes and is talking to kids. And the manager of the motel, played by the great Willem Dafoe, goes and basically gives this guy, takes his wallet, says, "I know where you live if I ever see you here again," and just basically terrorizes, and rightly so, terrorizes the guy. But a lot of those motels are they're pedophiles, they're people that have nowhere else to go, people, drug addicts, people down on their luck. It's very, very sad. And Disney, I think, you know, and I don't want to criticize because I don't know all the facts, but Disney, I think, you know, gives something like maybe $500,000 a year to supplement this, when in reality, Disney could be doing a lot more. And I say this pre-COVID. I know things have changed a little bit, you know, but when ticket prices are $130 for a one-day ticket to get into a park, at some point, you know, you've got all these people that move down to the area thinking that jobs are going to be plentiful and bountiful, and I can get a job and I can work for Disney World or something like that. And then you realize Disney World pays, you know, an hour. Exactly. That you're going to need two or three jobs to make ends meet. It just doesn't work out. So
let me tell you what Disney does. Okay. And it's very Machiavellian. Thank you. Ooh, my son Andrew bringing me the QT slushy. Very nice.
Nice.
So anyway, a shout out to the good
folks. What's a QT slushy?
That's like a 7-Eleven slushy. But, you know,
it's
probably bad for my my sugar count, but oh well. So anyway, but what they do, and I know this because maybe the woman I dated before, Mrs. Bowdrin, used to work at Disney. And of course, my friend Nancy from the courthouse was, along with the former girlfriend, what they call a Disney file. Are you familiar with that whole phenomenon, Barry?
Yes, I am.
It's people that are so friggin' into Disney that they want to work for Disney, even though Disney pays shit. And so what they do is they exploit these people that just want to be part of the Disney family, and they give – and I'll tell you a quick story of what happened. I don't know if I've ever told you this. So the girl that I was dating gets on with Disney, and she was one of the people – when was the last time you were at Disney, Barry? How many years ago?
I'll say 4 years ago.
Okay. So you remember those back in the day, I don't even know if they still do this. They would do the things where you'd park your car half a mile away and they have the trains that'll pick you up and bring you to the park. Okay. So she was one of the people that would either be the, "Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Disney World. My name is so-and-so and you're going to have a great time." You'd have the person doing that. Then you'd have the person in the back of the train that would sit there and go, "All clear." And you know, they're riding the very last car and they kind of give the wave to the person driving the tram. So she worked at the back of the tram, and what happened was she had not given the okay sign. The tram takes off, and she takes a bump out on the cement. Ooh. Okay? She, thankfully, was not badly injured, but what she did get, Bear, go figure, was the visit from one of the Disney execs saying, "What are you doing now? Oh, and what job would you like to have?" And what the reason that she wanted to work at Disney, she wanted to work on one of the show, Beauty and the Beast. You know, they have those sort of like Broadway shows.
Oh, yeah, yeah, in, absolutely.
You know, and she wanted to work in there and like the costuming and stuff like that. And she says, "Oh, that's where I'd really like to work." Guess who suddenly got a job in the costume department of one of those shows? Funny how that works out, huh? So anyway, so
to that end, I bet she had to sign a lot of papers.
Oh, you think?
Saying that,
yeah, she's not holding call anyone. Stephen P. New and ask him that question. I bet you I know what the answer is.
Yep.
So anyway, so that's what they do. And boy, how do we get off on the rail of talking about Disney? Yeah. But so you said this happened in Kissimmee, Florida, which is actually where I believe Disney is located. It's not located in Orlando.
That's correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, Barry, I know that you are nothing if not a food lover. We've established that here on this episode and in previous episodes. So, lo and behold, I came across an article, and, you know, I'm nothing if not a giver, Barry. I think you know that. And I thought to myself, let me save this for one of our episodes so Barry can talk about food. Yes, okay. Mm-hmm. This comes from the website, thetop10s.com. I may have to access that website in future episodes. But this particular episode, or this particular article, Barry, is titled Top 10 Favorite Foods. Now, let me clarify here, Barry. We are going to have what they claim are the top five favorite foods. I don't know if this is America or the world or whatever, but let me just ask you, what would you say would be number one? God bless you. What would you think would be number one?
On favorite foods in the world?
Yes.
I'd say pizza.
Okay, you are absolutely 100% right, Barry.
Okay.
Give me a check.
Give me a check. It's about time, check.
Okay, so that's a very good guess. But there are others. Now, let me just mention that there are some that are on here. I want to see which one it is so that you don't, like, one of the things that's on the list, okay, is hamburgers. Now, obviously, they differentiate between, like, hamburgers, you know, bacon cheeseburgers, steak burgers, all that kind of stuff. So it's a rather generic use of the term hamburgers, okay? So let me give you the ones, Barry, and you can offer your pithy commentary. Haven't used that word in a while, Barry, on the ones that just missed the top 10 and okay, whether you approve of them, disapprove. Barry, number 15, do you like a good apple?
Yeah, I like an apple.
I like an apple. It's very refreshing.
Yeah, it's
crispy. One of the few foods that I eat, by God, that's actually not bad for me, you know? So it has a little healthy component to it.
Absolutely.
So I like a good red. By the way, Red Delicious is my brand of choice. I don't know if you're a Granny Smith guy or one of those other.
I am a Granny. Well, there's a lot. There's the Fuji apples. There's the honey. I don't know. I used to buy all these apples when I lived in my house, but I like the Granny Smith only because it's a little sour. It's a little tangy. The green apple, I'm kind of a fan. But yeah, the Red Delicious is the standard.
I believe Granny Smith is the one that's primarily used in the cooking, like if you're making a nice apple pie or something like that.
Apple pie.
Yeah. So anyway, number 14, Barry, do you like a good spaghetti with meat sauce?
We love a good spaghetti with
meat sauce. Yes, my daughter giving thumbs up on the spaghetti with meat sauce, which is not being served at Casa de Baudrin today, by the way.
Oh.
So number 13, Barry, do you like a good cake? It just says cake.
I like a good cake, Jeff. There's a lot of bad cakes out there.
Who doesn't like a good cake? You know?
A good cake I like. But you know what? This is something, too. I think cupcakes are very overrated.
Mrs. Baudrin is a cupcake fan. I will say that.
Yeah, I'm obviously a donut guy, which, you know, you and everybody that knows me knows that. But yeah, cake is good, but there's a lot of bad cake out there as well.
Okay, let me ask you a question for the brothership and all the people listening, Barry. You said you like a good cake. You like a good food. Barry, we all have known that listen to this show on a regular basis that Barry has had his experience with Ethiopian food. Would you, in fact, eat a good Ethiopian cupcake?
Would I eat a good Ethiopian? Is there such a thing?
I don't know. It's just sometimes things come into my brain. I don't know why, but they do.
I'll tell you what, we ever have a get together again with all of our brother shippers, I will choose an Ethiopian restaurant. We can all eat Ethiopian together. How about that?
Okay. Number 12, Barry, cheeseburger. I got to be honest with you. If I'm given a choice between a good hamburger and a good cheeseburger, I'm going cheeseburger.
Absolutely. No questions asked. Yep.
I don't see. And I will say, to break the key is Abe, that hamburger is going to appear later in this list, higher up than cheeseburger. I love a good cheeseburger. Barry, you're a fan of a cheeseburger. What kind of cheese do you like on your cheeseburger? What's a favorite?
So it's cheddar or Swiss.
Swiss. That's my favorite. I'm certainly going to take a nice American cheese on my burger, but I like a good Swiss. It just adds a certain component there.
Yep.
So anyway, number 11, Barry. I'm just not a fan. I know a lot of people that are. Sushi. Do you like a good sushi?
Big fan. Big fan of sushi. Love it.
Any particular favorite type or kind? Just because I don't know anything about eating raw fish. What is your favorite type of sushi? What's your go-to place for sushi?
Sure. Place called Wuzhong that I go to. And I think when it comes to actual sushi, or sashimi. Sushi is with the rice. Sashimi is just the slice of fish. I like octopus, and I like octopus for the texture because it's very chewy. I also like toro, which is fatty tuna. So those are my two favorites. But the truth is, I like, when it comes to sushi, I can eat almost anything.
All righty. So now, Barry, let's enter the top 10, the exalted top 10. Number 10, Barry. Oh, as we are recording this, as I mentioned, Mrs. Baldron is getting ready to prepare the Easter spread with Aunt Ruby's mac and cheese. Number 10, mac and cheese, Barry. I know you're a fan.
Love mac and cheese. If it's a good mac and cheese, as you said, good cake, good mac and cheese.
Bad mac and cheese is not good. No, the whole stuff with Kraft that you buy in the store, or the little packets that you can, like, you know, put in a microwave and you steam them a minute, and then you're like, who eats that crap? No, my daughter's raising her hand, but no, that's not a good answer. The proper kind. And by the way, Mrs. Baldron, you know that every time we make Aunt Ruby's mac and cheese, sainted Aunt Ruby, shout out to Varnville, South Carolina, Mrs. Baldron makes scallop potatoes. Why? Because although she makes macaroni and cheese, and she makes very good macaroni and cheese, she doesn't like that macaroni and cheese. It's a standing issue here in the Baldron household.
Wow. Scallop potatoes, though, delicious. I'm in for that. Yeah.
I will eat scallop potatoes. Not a huge fan, though. I would rather have Aunt Ruby's mac and cheese, but, you know.
I want both.
Scallop potatoes is not a salad-like issue, which, by the way, Mrs. Baldron the other day went to this, or I should say had lunch at this place. Hold on one second for an administrative issue. Mrs. Baldron, what was the name of that place again?
Salad Chick.
Chicken Salad Chick. Do you like a good chicken salad, Barry?
I'm okay with chicken salad.
Baldron goes to this place, Chicken Salad Chick, and she said it was absolutely wonderful. She was very happy. A friend of ours' daughter works there. So 70% discount on lunch that she bought for the office, by the way, Barry.
That I would like.
Yeah, yes. No, of course. Yeah, yeah. Mr. Mitcher's Cheapskate.
Tell you the best chicken salad I ever had, Jeff.
Yes.
Chicken salad sandwich, New York City at a deli. 4 strips of bacon on the sandwich with it. Fantastic. 4 strips of
bacon on Barry's chicken salad.
Yep.
But here's the interesting thing. Mrs. Baldron was asked, would your husband like to have some of that chicken salad? Guess what the answer was, Bear?
No, he doesn't.
And why?
There's vegetables in it.
No. Well, that's part of it. But it includes the word salad.
Salad. All right.
No, yeah. I won't eat chicken salad. I won't eat egg salad, potato salad. No, because it includes the word salad. I'm very strict on those issues. Okay, so now number 9, Barry. I know without asking that Barry Rose, Lord Barron's himself, likes a good taco.
Oh, fuck yeah.
No, we get a big fuck yeah from Barry on that one. Yeah, so any particular type of taco? What would you like? Your chicken in your taco, beef, a steak? What are you looking for?
I like the al pastor taco, but I like, honestly, whether it's beef, chicken, pork, fish tacos I like. There's no taco that I'm going to say no to. Maybe tripe. There are tripe tacos.
Ooh, my.
Yeah, I might avoid those.
I'm the same way. I like pretty much any, but I like a good steak taco with you, where it's not like a hamburger. It's more like little cut pieces of steak.
Yes,
I like.
I would
so
agree.
The number
did
8.
Did you get steak tacos at El Limon when you were in Philly?
I can't remember, to be honest with you.
You might have, yeah.
Okay. Number 8 in the top 10 favorite foods, Barry. Oh, well, please. Had some this morning, folks. Bacon, Barry.
I mean, I had bacon this morning too, Jeff. I had it yesterday, I think twice. I had a breakfast and lunch.
Here again, you're going out for breakfast. Are you getting the bacon or are you getting the sausage?
Oh.
That's a tough call. It's a tough call.
I like bacon more, but sometimes I eat so much bacon that I would get sausage, and I like sausage. And then it comes down to, are we talking patties or links?
That's a tough call. I usually go with patties, but, you know, that's me. So here's the thing. When Mrs. Baldron and I go out for a nice, lovely breakfast, okay, usually say if we're getting your eggs over medium and we got to make the choice between bacon and sausage, if she gets something, you know, like maybe she'll get some potatoes or something like that, I feel as an owner of a dog incumbent to get a couple slices of the old bacon so that we can put them in Gunny's meal and Molly shares it, of course. If Mrs. Baldron goes for the bacon, then I'm going to order the sausage patty. That's how I roll. Okay, number 7, Barry. Oh, well, please. A steak, please. I mean, a good steak, medium rare, or as Barry taught me many years ago, medium rare plus.
Yeah, steak is one of the things
steak
that
should
I actually
be higher, as far as I'm
steak
concerned.
Should be higher. And I haven't had a good steak since I've moved, partly because my barbecue is back at the house. I'm in an apartment complex and they do have community barbecues, but I'm not quite sure I want to go throw a steak on one of those.
Do you want to have the Montreal seasoning on your barbecue and throw it on top of the steak? That's good eating right there. So
that sounds good.
Number six, as I said, cheeseburgers were like 11 hamburgers at number six. I think that needs to be switched, Barry. I mean, I love a good hamburger, but put a slice of cheese on that thing.
The fact that they're differentiating between hamburger and cheeseburger, and it's differentiated by like five different, slot. I mean, come on. It's the same fucking thing, whether it's got or not. But I do prefer, and I think most people do. Most people will say, I'll take a cheeseburger as opposed to just a hamburger. I don't know.
So number five, Barry, French fries. So everyone loves a good French fry. Let me ask you, of these four choices, because I'm going to put this in the group because I saw this posted by the Food Network on Twitter, Barry, which one of these French fries, if you were given a choice, would you eliminate? You like this one? Eliminate one forever. Okay, so your choice is the classic shoestring type of French fry, your crinkle, your curly ones, or your waffle fries. Which one are you throwing out, Barry?
Going to come down to between the, you didn't say steak fry, and I'm happy because I love
part of it. That wasn't part of the choice.
And I love the steak fry. It's going to come down to between curly and waffle. I'll probably say curly to eliminate if it's a good waffle fry. Unfortunately, a lot of them are not. But if it's a good waffle fry, I prefer that. Curly fries, it's a gimmick to me. I've just never been into it.
Yeah, the Chick-fil-A waffle fries, by the time you get them back to the table, they've kind of lost a little bit of the crispiness. And they also almost universally need to be salted more. I don't know what's going on. McDonald's gives you plenty of the friggin' salt. Chick-fil-A, step up your salt game. That's all I got to say. So anyway, Barry, let's see what I got next here. Number four, ice cream, Barry.
Yeah,
who doesn't love ice cream? Who doesn't love ice cream?
I like ice cream. For me, it's not the end all be all when it comes to something sweet. But at the same time, if it's really fucking unbelievable ice cream, then I do enjoy it.
Okay. Give me your go-to favorite kind of ice cream.
Yeah, absolutely. There is. So I just had it in Boston. There is a local chain called JP Licks, and they do I'm sure I'm going to butcher this. It's named after Nomar Garcia Parra. And it's like Nomar Garcia cherry, and it's a cherry vanilla ice cream with chocolate chunks that I really like. But with that, I like most ice creams. It's got to be good ice cream, but it's not so much a flavor.
Yeah, when I go out to your Cold Stones or one of those type of thing, your Dairy Queens, I usually get the cookies and cream. You know, I like a good vanilla ice cream. You know, with the Oreos. When I'm going to the store, bringing home the store bots, I like there was one that just came out, the Bluebell. They got a butter crunch, and it's like if you took about 1,000 Butterfingers and mixed them with vanilla ice cream, a nice little swirl going on. That's my current little go-to favorite. But
that sounds good. Jeff, just to give you a heads up, if you head over to your local Target, is there a Target near you, by the way?
Target, yes, there is.
Target. They are stocking, at least in the Pennsylvania region, which makes me think it's national, though. They are stocking Cheesecake Factory ice cream, and they are doing a cookies and cream version that is Zoe's favorite. I've got it in the fridge right now. You got to make the move on that one. You'll love
it. I'm going to put this out there for the brothership. One of the things that I wistfully, as I walk past the ice cream section in the grocery store, Mrs. Badrin will verify this, I search longingly for the Ten Roof Sundae brand of ice cream I missed, and nobody seems to stock anymore. You want to know why? And I haven't mentioned this in a while. Because of that one fuck stick out there that decided to go into, I don't know, Walmart and open up the Bluebell ice cream and start licking it. And it was fucking Tin Roof Sunday. And because of that, they don't fucking carry that anymore. Don't get me started on Barry. It's going to get me on a rant.
All right.
Number three, Barry, chocolate.
Oh, yeah. I had chocolate last night. Yeah, of course.
Do you like a milk chocolate, a dark chocolate? What do you like?
Oh, no. It's milk. Last night I had a whatchamacallit bar. This is right around 11.
Crispy, like Rice Krispie-ish kind of crunch.
And chocolate. There's wafers in there, and it's got a nice chocolate flavor. And this was right around 11:30 midnight last night. I dipped into a whatchamacallit. I love chocolate. I love candy. I'm totally fucked. Yeah.
All right, number two, Barry. Oh, as referenced earlier in this fine show, you went to Raising Cane's and you got, what was it, Barry?
I got chicken fingers.
Yes. Well, this is fried chicken. Same so, you know, number two, fried chicken, you know, go to Publix, of course, always a go-to place for
fantastic. Yeah,
really. Now you're, I can hear you're doing the Homer Simpson thing. Chicken. Yeah. So, and as we mentioned, Barry, number one, pizza and your go-to, have you been to an Anthony's Coal Fired lately?
I was at an Anthony's last Saturday. Not, we're recording on a Sunday right now. This was 8 days ago. But you know what, Jeff, you know what's interesting? When people post, and I've been thinking about this, when they post photos of pizza, the comments are so unique because there's so many different types and versions of pizza. And it's like I'll post an Anthony's and the response for a lot of people is, it's burned. Why would you eat a pizza that's burned?
That's the whole point.
Oh, well, you and I know that.
Yeah.
And other people post a photo and it's like this milky white, almost steamed looking pizza. That for me, I could never eat. And then somebody's going, that's the most beautiful pizza I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So I do want to post. And again, this episode drops on Tuesday. At some point on Tuesday, I'm gonna post what I think is a perfect pizza. And then I want to hear what other people think as well and what their versions of a perfect pizza are.
The wife the other night on the way home picking up some pizza from Vinny's of New York in Duluth, Georgia, which we really should get as a sponsor considering how often my wife and I eat there. They've got the very nice crispy pizza, then the spicy meatballs and the garlic rolls. You're set not only for that night, but you got leftovers for the next day for lunch too. So anyway, as we begin to wrap up this episode, Barry, I want to remind the good folks, this show will come out Tuesday. I want to say within a day or two after that, Barry, very exciting news here on Breaking Cafe with Adrian and Barry. Lean in close, folks. Lean in. Listen. You listening? Patreon episode one will be recorded. Boom! Boom! Big news, Barry. What do you think?
There will be nudity. So let's...
And in some cases, graphic nudity. You know, hopefully no graphic violence. No one will be in a hotel being set fire to. Although, quite frankly, those guys have deserved it. I'm just going to say.
Yeah,
so, you know, so we do got the Patreon episode coming up soon. We're very excited about that to be recording our first time.
Yep.
Lou has told us that he's looking forward to the filthy lucre come flying in from all you people. And we will be offering up details on how you can become a Patreon subscriber. I have had, as we said, Chris Hillman at the very start of this episode says, I want to give you my money. We encourage attitudes like that here on Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry. We want you to want to give us our money or your money or whatever. So anyway, on that note, we appreciate you listening in. You can follow me on Twitter at Bowdrin Jeff. And we look forward to the movie tournament, Barry, some crushing defeats as a Big Lebowski and other things, some real surprises, don't you think?
Yeah, no comment. No comment. But yeah, there have been a lot of surprises and a lot of disappointment on my end. So yes.
Okay. So on behalf of my co-host, Barry Rose, and our producer, the sweet man, Lou Kippelman. I will remind you, Breaking Kayfabe with Bowdrin and Barry, a production of the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network, a network of many fine podcasts, but I will say only one of those podcasts is Peabody Award winning and Pulitzer Prize nominee.
Sherman.
Matter of fact, it's Sherman. And this podcast, Barry, so finely thought of that we are even they're considering us for the Nobel Peace Prize because we bring people together here on this show. And okay, it's getting a little ridiculous. Until next week.